This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is South Carolina Republican Congressman Mick Mulvaney, a freshman representing the Palmetto State's 5th Congressional District. He is also a member of both the House Budget and the House Small Business Committee, as well as the Joint Economic Committee. We want to get his thoughts today as the debate plays on over the way the U.S. budget will look for fiscal year 2012. There's already been competing visions set forth by Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan and President Obama, and now members of Congress are starting to hear some feedback from their constituents, some of it positive, some of it negative, and we want to also separate fact from fiction in addition to talking about that reaction. And Congressman, thanks so much for being with us.
Happy to do it.
What have you heard from your constituents on this Easter recess about your vote for the Ryan plan and what the Ryan plan contains specifically as it relates to Medicare?
It's been really very interesting to see. I've had a chance to talk to several groups, talking to some more again this week. The initial reaction is somewhat muted, somewhat defensive. You know, why are you doing this, et cetera, et cetera. But then once I get a chance to lay out for them exactly why we're doing this and the hole that we've dug for ourselves, the reaction comes almost entirely over to the other side, which is, are you doing enough? Are you sure you're doing enough? Is this enough to save us? Is this enough to fix the problems that we've got? I can't tell you the number of people who walk up to me afterwards and say, do whatever you have to do to solve this. This is my children's future. So that's encouraging that, you know, if we can simply educate people on why we're doing this. We're not doing this because we hate Medicare. We're not doing this because we don't like old people. We're doing this because it's the only way to fix the system. And I think folks appreciate that. Certainly they do in my district in South Carolina.
Well, a new survey from Gallup suggests that older Americans are actually the strongest supporters of the Ryan plan, whether that's because they get to keep Medicare as it exists or they see the extent of the problem is unclear from the survey. What are you hearing from older constituents?
No, in fact, it's funny you mention that because those are the folks who go out of their way to call me, grab me on the way out afterwards and say, please, please fix it. And it's not because we're not changing the system for them. It's because they are legitimately concerned that the system is not going to be there for the next generation, that they need to do something in order to make this program available for their kids and their grandkids. So I think it's the latter. I don't think it has anything to do with it. It's not a selfish thing. It's not, oh, good, I'm glad that we're protected and we won't be affected by this. It's not that at all. It's a true concern about the viability of these programs.
And potentially it could affect them because the system's supposed to go bankrupt in less than a decade, correct?
That's Medicare. Yeah, Social Security actually has, I think, 27 years, 25 years. Medicare, 9 years. So there's certainly that aspect to it as well.
What do you sense at this point in the early stages of explaining this? Because you mentioned a lot of folks come in with one notion and leave with another notion from these town hall meetings. Is the greatest misconception about what the Ryan plan does for health care regarding older Americans?
I think the greatest misconception is that we're doing it out of spite. I mean, certainly to listen to the folks on the other side of the aisle, demagogue the issue. It's, you know, these are the Republicans up to their old tricks. They hate Social Security. They never liked Medicare. They want to get rid of it. This is just going to end it. So folks come into it thinking, you know, having heard that from the other side, especially from the president, thinking that we're doing this out of spite. And then you lay out, it's sort of like having a family discussion and say, look, this is why we're cutting back on whatever it was that your family had to cut back on during the recession. It's not because, you know, we don't like going to the movies. We don't like going out for dinner on Friday nights. We don't like doing these things simply because we can't afford it. And folks in my district especially, hey, listen, everybody in the 5th District has done this. You know, we've got 15% unemployment down here. We felt the brunt of the recession. Almost every family down here has had to sit down across the table from each other and say, okay, what can't we afford to do this month or this year that we ordinarily would do? Everybody's done that. And when folks realize that that's what's driving what's happening with Republicans in Washington, and that's why we're talking about changing Medicare, reforming Social Security, Medicaid, and it's not out of spite. This is not politics. It's simply math. Then I think there's a new appreciation for it and a certain respect for the way we've gone about it.
What's it going to cost seniors if the Ryan plan becomes enacted? The president was claiming that it's going to add about $6,000 to the tab of the average senior over time. What can you tell us about fact and fiction there?
Well, you know, I've seen the numbers, and the more important question is what does it cost if we do nothing? Because like you mentioned just a few minutes ago, if you do nothing, Medicare is busted in 9 years. We've not seen anything out of the other side to be an alternative proposal. And, you know, to me, being new, I guess I still have to plead guilty to a certain amount of naivete about how this system works. The real disappointment here is that the other side hasn't offered anything in terms of an alternative. The president's second budget, what I call his do-over budget, was a lot of rhetoric, you know, a lot of good-sounding language without any specifics to it. Someone asked me, did we get a chance to vote on the president's budget on the House floor? And we didn't, because it didn't come anywhere close to being specific enough to be a budget. There's no real policy coming from the other side, and that's what's so disappointing, is that we took the courageous first step. You know, as Paul Ryan says, we led with our chin. You know, we touched the third rail and said, let's talk about Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. And instead of coming to us and saying, look, we don't like your policies, we agree with you, we have to fix the system, here's some policies of our own, can we meet someplace in the middle? The Democrats have essentially, you know, said that we're going to make grandma, grandpa, you know, sleep in the street and eat dog food. So they've demagogued the issue, and we've not made any progress on it. And that's a real shame.
We just, of course, finished the continuing resolution debate. Conservatives, Republicans initially wanted $100 billion in cuts. Then it was 61. Ultimately, it was $38.5 billion, and the CBO considered the savings for the current fiscal year quite a bit lower than that. What type of compromise do you think is either necessary or possible here on the debt ceiling vote or on the budget appropriations bills a little later in the year, given that Democrats still control the White House and the Senate?
We look at the debt ceiling, because that's obviously going to happen next. I think the people ask me about the budget's future. Obviously, the budget won't pass the Senate. It doesn't have to pass the Senate. The way the budget is set up, the process is set up, is that now that it has been approved by the House, those spending limits that we set for this year will be binding on the House. So when we get to the appropriations process, we will act as if that budget that we passed last year is the law, and we will conduct ourselves accordingly. What the Senate does, obviously, is up to the Senate, as you know. When we go to the debt ceiling, I think it's going to be a really interesting debate. You hear all these folks on the other side saying, well, we have to pass a clean resolution. You can't vote against it. I pointed out, I think I was in budget committee one day when we were hearing testimony from Mr. Geithner, and Mr. Geithner was encouraging us to vote to raise the debt ceiling on a clean basis without anything attached to it. And all the Democrats were agreeing with him, and every Democrat member of the committee, save one, had voted against raising the debt ceiling in the past. Both parties are guilty of that in the past. What's really important about the debt ceiling process is whether or not we're able to use this opportunity, and it's the whole reason you have to vote on a debt ceiling in the first place, use the opportunity to change the way we spend money, to change the structure and the culture of the city, to change the processes of government so that we don't end up here again anytime soon. And that'll be the real interesting thing. Can we find things to agree upon? Can Democrats, for example, support a balanced budget amendment? Why not? I've floated the idea of term limits. Can Democrats support that as part of a debt ceiling raise? I don't see why not. Still having some level of naivete about this issue, I'm hoping that we can.
You mentioned the balanced budget. Others have suggested mandatory spending caps. What specifically in those areas will you need to see and have promised to you before you vote for any extension of the debt ceiling?
Something tangible and real, so it's not a promise of something to happen in the future, something tangible and real that changes the structure of the way the government works. Balanced budget amendment would do that. Spending caps would do that. Term limits would do that. I'm talking about real change, not one-time savings of any sum of money. I'm not talking about non-binding resolutions and censuses of the Congress and so forth that mean nothing. It's got to be real. It's simply too important a problem. The hole is too deep to continue to pretend that we can dance around the edges of the issues. We have to go right to the center of this and change the structure.
Last quick question before we let you go. I guess it's a two-parter. Do you think the Democrats will agree to any or most of that, and what happens if they don't?
What's the argument against the balanced budget amendment? You hear that the Democrats, Nancy Pelosi, I think, came out the other day and said that fiscal responsibility was one of her highest priorities. So with that as background, what's wrong with the balanced budget amendment? What's wrong with term limits? Why do you have to be in Congress forever? So, again, I see no reason, given the rhetoric, why the Democrats couldn't support that. And if they don't support it, who knows what happens? We'll see as we go through the summer.
We'll certainly stay on top of it, and we'll be checking back in with you, I'm sure. Congressman, thank you very much for your time today.
Great. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, sir. South Carolina Republican Congressman Mick Mulvaney represents South Carolina's 5th Congressional District, member of the Budget Committee, the Small Business Committee, and the Joint Economic Committee. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.